The following program was originally broadcast on January 9th, 1998. Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. As busy as everyone is, it's easy to overlook changes in the larger world, especially in areas we too often ignore until there's a crisis. Our guest is Don Oberdorfer, a journalist who retired from the Washington Post after 25 years. 17 of those years, he was the Post's diplomatic correspondent. He's a committed journalist, and so he moved on to look beyond daily journalism. Where does one begin to think about the world? Well, Don Oberdorfer began at the beginning with some exceptionally good advice.
One of the people who gave me some very fine advice was Ralph McGill, the late editor of the Atlanta Constitution, who told me, I knew him, I was a copy boy on the Atlanta Constitution in my earliest days, and he said to me, don't bother going to journalism school, go to some good school and learn as much as you can about history, economics, political science, art, etc.
The world.
The world.
The real world.
I took his advice.
With the entire world from which to pick, it is Korea that holds Don Oberdorfer's attention. Korea South and North. When he was at the Post, he specialized in Northeast Asia, but there's more. Oberdorfer believes Korea's challenges are the world's challenges. Here is one homogeneous people with two vastly different political and economic systems, all of them a captive to their geography. After 2 years of research and two more years making sense of what he'd gathered, Don Oberdorfer has one opinion about the two Koreas. The fate of those two nations is critically important to all of us, and here's why. Don Oberdorfer, as I was thinking about having a chance to speak with you, I got a sense that my head was kind of going boing, 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 boing between past and present, future perfect, past tense. When one talks about Asia, one talks invariably about very ancient things and very new things, all of which are wrapped up in where we're going, aren't they?
Yes, of course, it's the most ancient part of the world in a sense. You could say Mesopotamia is the place where the world civilizations began, but some of the oldest civilizations of the world are in China and Japan and other parts of Asia, including Korea. It's also, in some ways, the most modern part of the world, the place where the economies of the world are advancing at the most rapid rate, even though they have been recently hitting some problems. The fact is that the economies of East Asia, especially, have been growing at a rate much, much faster than that of Western Europe or the United States or any other part of the world. So you have this contrast of ancient cultures and modern practices and maybe postmodern almost ways of life mixed up together with some ways of life that are very unchanging.
I'd like to sort of put this in context. There's a tendency, I think, sometimes to think of foreign affairs and what goes on in faraway countries as interesting reading, a diversion, but not terribly important to the way we live our lives. Just from an economic standpoint, you mentioned that there's this so-called new economy floating around out there, which is distinguished from the old economy by two important things. One is so-called globalization of the economy, and the other is information technology. Asia is smack in the middle of both of those. And to the extent that there are economic problems in Asia or economic challenges are in Asia or almost anything going on in Asia, to the extent there is a new economy and globalization is an important part of that, and to the extent that Asia is a major contributor to information technology, it would seem that that is a very important place and that we would do well to keep our eye on what's going on out there.
The United States is more involved with the rest of the world today than it ever has been in its history, except in time of war. Our economy is very much tied to the international economy. I hate the word globalization because it's a kind of thought-paralyzing word.
Yes, it is.
But the creation of the global economy was made possible essentially by the invention of communication satellites and the fact that every part of the world now can be in touch with every other part within a matter of seconds. This is the so-called information age part of it. The global economy and the information part of the global economy, in my opinion, is the cause for some of the dramatic changes we've seen in the world. I covered the U.S. negotiations with the Soviet Union in the 1980s and early 1990s. The Soviet Union collapsed essentially because of the global economy, because that system could not accommodate it. And the people in charge of it, namely Mikhail Gorbachev, realized that unless they made some changes, they were headed right for oblivion. The rest of the world was going to pass them by. He made the changes, but not successfully enough. Now, East Asia, Japan, lately China, Korea, Southeast Asia, and so forth, have had economies which, in the case of Japan, is three or four decades of tremendous growth. China, since Deng Xiaoping released the energies of the Chinese people in 1978 and 1979, actually, since the mid-80s, China has been growing at about 10% a year. This is the most populous country in the world, mm-hmm. with 1.2 billion people. And it also, for the last, most of the last decade, has been the fastest growing economy in the world. Well, you can imagine the implications of that. They are terrific. If Americans don't pay attention to East Asia, I don't know what in the world they're thinking about.
Peril. We are talking with Don Oberdorfer, who has spent a lifetime reporting on things going on in the world, the big world. And we have a great deal more to be said. Bill Russell is with me. I am Paula Gordon. This is the Paula Gordon Show, and we hope that you will stay with us.